Welcome. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and on this blustery day, we're talking about wind and trees and tree damage. And it's funny because we started thinking about this program when we had that big windstorm, not knowing we were going to have two more windstorms. So we're right in the middle of a high wind warning right now in Anchorage, so it's really timely. I'd like to welcome our two guests. We've got tree experts on with us today. Patricia Joyner. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Kathleen.
Patricia's with the Alaska Community Forestry Program. And we also have Jim Flott. We're lucky to have Jim here. He's from Spokane. He's done a lot of work up in Alaska. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really lucky. These guys are getting ready for a big conference this weekend on trees, so they took some time out of a very busy schedule. So welcome. I'm hoping our listeners have tree questions. I hope they're looking out in their backyard and seeing maybe a tree leaning or maybe a tree down, or maybe they are thinking, I want trees. What are the right kind of trees I should be putting in the ground? These are two people here that are just terrific experts to ask those questions to. So we hope we'll hear from you this afternoon. You can call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage. And if you're outside of Anchorage, you can call 1-888-353-5752. And we also take emails over the air, and you can just send your email to hometown@alaskapublic.org, and we try to read those and answer those questions as well. I want to remind you that today's program will be broadcast again this evening at 7, but the showtime now is your time to call in and ask your questions. And I also want to direct you to our website, alaskapublic.org. Patricia shared some amazing photos from some damaged trees in the Anchorage area, and you should take a look at those. We'll probably be talking about some of those kinds of problems today. And also we have a lot of important links there to ways you can get help in town if you suddenly are waking up to the needs of your trees. There's some good information there on how to go about helping your trees. So let's get started. Welcome, Patricia. Welcome, Jim. I want to also mention we hope to hear from Mike Post of Tall Trees, who's out in the field today, and we think we'll hear from him in the second half of the show. He's kind of going to give us a field report on what's going on out there. So when Patricia and I were getting ready for the show, she said, I really want to make sure we talk about safety, and I want to talk about that too. But first, I just am going to ask both of them what they've seen in Anchorage. Getting ready for this conference and just in their normal jobs, they look a lot at trees. So what did you see when you went out and looked around Anchorage?
Well, we looked at trees in a couple different settings. Some are the forest trees and some are landscapes in people's yards and along streets, and you see different things in different places. A lot of the trees and landscapes were things I sort of would expected because they're things we talk about a lot. We've really planted an awful lot of cherry trees, so we're really have too many of that species, and they have inherent problems with structure. So that they often break apart in storms. They grow fast and live short lives. So I did see a lot of that where the Amur choke cherries, the ones people see with the coppery bark that,
yes,
that are really beautiful that just split apart. And also the those and the Prunus virginiana, the choke cherries with the purple leaves, a lot of those fell, and they often had been planted too deep. That's really common, and we talk about it all the time. And then the trunk is decayed around the trunk below the soil level. And then the roots are coming back up because the roots want to grow near the surface of the soil. And often they were girdling the trunk, sort of like a noose. So when the wind blew, the tree's just not anchored well. Plus they have a large crown and have the leaves on them. So there are a lot of those failures that we saw. Cottonwoods, of course,
that was sort of a recent fad, do you think, the cherry trees were?
We've been planting them for probably 30 years, but often exclusively in the landscape where there's not much variety, there's just the same tree. So when you have a problem, you have a really large-scale problem that if you had a more diverse species, you wouldn't have that.
You know, my neighbor, I've got a chain link fence between my house, my backyard, and my neighbor's backyard, and he had one of those cherry trees fail on him, and I think he probably had it about maybe 10 years, maybe? Does that sound like about the time when they begin to fail? Or is there a size that you want to think about not letting it get above? How do you know?
A tree's not necessarily more likely to fail because of the size. It's probably the condition, and it could have been a poor form when it was planted, so the structure's not strong. Mm-hmm. And then as it gets larger, that just intensifies. So with the cherries, you see a lot of large branches coming out of one point, kind of.
Yes.
You picture that?
Yes.
And when they're small, then maybe that's not so serious. But as they grow, they press against each other, and you'll see them just push each other apart, even without the wind.
Wow.
And you could fix that when they're small. When they get older, you can't. But, you know, an oak tree, it is not old for maybe decades, but a cherry right. tree's kind of old after 25 years, so they're real short-lived trees.
So we're talking those amur cherry trees?
Amur choke cherries, yeah, with the coppery bark, and then the choke cherries that people call Canada Reds, that's one cultivar with the red leaves that turn red in July.
Yeah.
The Mayday trees.
Right. They're so beautiful. When they get all those little white flowers, they're popular, I think, because...
Yeah, and we started planting them when we didn't know what to plant, and they're real hardy. So they survived, and the moose didn't eat them so well. But we've just planted way too many, and there are a lot of nice choices we know will survive fine now.
Oh, that's
that
good.
People
we should,
could choose
yeah.
from.
We'll talk about that. So if you've got cherry trees in your yard, you should be. What should people do if they've got them and they didn't fail? Should they take them down, or should they?
Well, that's up to them. I wouldn't necessarily take them down. I've taken some down just to replace with something else.
Uh huh. So it's something you could consider.
Jim had thoughts about cherries.
I think before they do anything, they should consult a ISA-certified arborist and have the tree evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
Don't second guess or
predict.
Or predict what may happen with the tree. As Patricia said, most of the failures that we saw with the amur choke cherries, the Canadian reds, the Mayday trees, there were predisposing defects associated with those trees, like stem girdling roots, co-dominant stems where the trunk had two forks in it and no connection between the wood, and it split out in the storm.
That's what happened to my neighbor. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So those defects are very evident to an arborist, and they can predict those trees are going to fail. So having those trees looked at long before a storm like this, some of those could be mitigated and you could have avoided much of the damage.
Hmm.
On the other species of trees that we saw that had tremendous failure rates were cottonwoods, but it wasn't necessarily tree failures. Most of the cottonwoods that I saw, the failures were associated with soil failures, which is entirely different than a tree failure to an arborist. Big difference. There were no defects in most of those cottonwoods. In fact, most of the cottonwoods that I saw that failed, the wood was solid. There was no rot. There was no indication of root rot or any kind of defects or decay in the tree. It was basically the soil gave way and the entire root system came out of the ground. And that's what caused most of the failures in the cottonwoods. So we really want to get the message out that they shouldn't condemn a species just because it was the most frequently failed tree in a storm. You really have to look at why each individual tree failed.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that can happen is to have someone evaluate those situations.
Mm-hmm.
As we call it in the industry, it's forensic arboriculture. We go in and find out why the trees failed in those kind of situations. Then we can make statements more accurately rather than condemning an entire species.
Yeah.
Because cottonwoods provide a lot of value. Even though it's not the best species of tree comparative to an oak or an ash or a linden,
mm-hmm.
it still does provide benefits for the community. It's a very common tree in riparian habitats, does a lot for soil stabilization and stormwater mitigation. And again, it's a tree, so it's providing us oxygen and many other benefits. So the trees that we saw fail in that species mostly was associated with soil failures, not the tree.
So we can't demonize one kind of tree. I want to go to the phones because we've got a caller. Hi, Bruce. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I'm glad you're having the show today. I live in East Anchorage, and I have a bunch of mature trees that ornamentals that I planted 30, 35 years ago, and I lost a couple in the windstorm. One big choke cherry ornamental that I had lost a major limb and split all the way down to the ground level. And then I had a nice big mature birch do the same thing. One big limb about 4 feet high split off of that. And in years past, people used to patch those wounds. I wonder what arborists say this day and age to try to save the tree. What should we bandage those injuries with?
Good question, Bruce.
Yeah, very good question, Bruce. Thanks for the call. It really requires an on-site evaluation because every situation is a little bit different. But generally speaking, from what you describe, those trees are probably not salvageable because the split that you saw happen in the storm event was related to something I mentioned earlier, the codominant stem, where the forks on the tree really have no union between the wood. It's just bark pressed between bark in those two junctures of branches. And so they can split out even without a windstorm, just from the sheer weight of the two branches. And the way yours split out, it sounded like it split clear to the base of the tree. Probably not salvageable. Other scenarios, maybe it really depends on the degree and size of those two branches that split out. We can attempt to save those, but in those kind of scenarios, it's pretty difficult. One of the things that arborists do not do anymore is use tree paint on any of those wounds or any other kind of magic elixir on those wounds. Trees have a built-in system that seals those wounds over naturally. So if you make the proper pruning cuts after a storm event, and that sometimes that's very difficult to do because of branch tear outs and, as you describe, a complete split or rip out, we let the tree seal over itself without any kind of treatment from a chemical or anything like that. So without actually seeing your trees the way you describe them, my guess is that they're probably not salvageable because of the degree of split that occurred all the way to the base of the tree.
The two trees I'm thinking of specifically, the main stem of the tree that exists now is real strong and hardy, but the break where it split out, I would think just try to keep it so it doesn't collect water or something like that and rot itself.
Well, again, it depends on the nature of the wound and how deep the branch tore out. The branches that are attached to the trunk or the scaffold branches actually have a fairly deep penetration into the part that they're attached to. And when you get a branch that rips out from a storm event, it usually creates a very deep, extensive wound into the part that it's attached to, which makes it very difficult to seal that over because it disrupts many parts of the tree in the process. So really the best thing we can tell you to do is get a certified arborist out there to evaluate the trees. It's much like you calling your doctor and trying to get a diagnosis over the phone. We can't do it without seeing the tree.
But you can tell them that painting over, some of the remedies of the past aren't really good anymore.
Yeah, it's using tree paint is about like going to the doctor and having him diagnose. We need to let your blood out and have you cure some of the problems you have by bloodletting.
Oh, dear. Well, thanks a lot, Bruce. I'm going to go to another caller. Hi, Beverly. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Oh, hi. Great program. A question or maybe a rant about May Day trees. I'm living in a home surrounded by May Day trees. They're all volunteers from the mom tree. They have invaded the empty lot next door as well as my neighbor's yard. We have been at war with them trying to take them out, and so we took some out this year, and unfortunately the storm came through and knocked down a lot of the birch trees, which had been sort of held up by the May Day trees. So I feel really adamant that people should actually consider these an invasive tree. They're really crowding out native species.
Mm. Well, what do you say, Patricia?
Well, that tree has been a concern for a while. I used to plant them, and they're beautiful, but then we found maybe 10 years ago that they really were spreading, and it seemed to be they have so many berries, and the birds had started eating them, and they were spreading them, especially along our green belts. So there's been a real effort by the city and state to remove them in some areas where they are threatening the native plants, especially along Chester Creek and some of our parks. And I don't see them planted in public projects at all anymore, and they don't. You can look at it a couple ways. It's sort of an opportunity to try something better. So they really are a problem, though. They really will keep sprouting up like a cottonwood, and they get spread. So
you have to be a vigilante to keep them.
Yeah, once you've got them, they're like any other kind of weed. They're hard to get rid of, and they're a very large weed. So they do damage the habitat. So I'd say we have a website that we designed with the Cooperative Extension Service and the local chapter of American Society of Landscape Architecture, and it's alaskaplants.org. And it talks about the trees we know that are successful all through Alaska, and it'll tell you what zone and what they're like and what size they are. So you can go on there, and a lot of them we have pictures, and you can find something that is a good alternative. You know, other trees with flowers, other trees with fall color, and then look at the storm actually as an opportunity to have another planting spot.
Yeah, that's great. So remember that website. I saw it. It's beautiful. It's very helpful. And you can remember the address Patricia gave, or you can go to alaskapublic.org. We've got it there, too. So maybe we're going to see, maybe the storm was kind of an opportunity. Maybe we should look at it that way. And I think it would be kind of fun to talk about maybe some new species you think we might want to consider that have been determined to be healthy and thriving in our climate. What do you think?
Well, we've seen the last few years people have started planting some. We don't want to, like, go the other way.
I know.
And now we plant all Norway maples, but we know Norway maples do well, and we see a lot of those in public projects and in people's homes. Oaks, I love the bur oaks, and people are surprised oaks grow here, but there's some doing very well. They never have any damage. Structurally, they're a good tree. They don't have pest problems. And I think there are other oaks that people just need to try because I think they'll do well. Linden's a really nice tree, and there's some really large ones that have obviously been here a long time, but people don't realize what they're seeing, and they don't notice, oh, that's a nice tree.
Yeah.
Jim probably has some ideas from others, but there are really a lot of things for different situations you need to decide how much room you have. You know, if it's a small tree, maybe a Japanese tree, lilac. I think people think, oh, maybe I need a small tree, and they get a cherry, and they don't realize, well, 30 feet, that's a small tree, but it's 30 feet wide, and the whole crown is down around where there's pedestrians and vehicles and yards activity. So if you have a tall tree, they actually provide a lot more benefits, and the crown is up above signs and windows and activity instead of filling up your whole yard like a chokecherry does with a big crown.
I just want to remind our listeners, if you've just joined us, we're talking about trees and wind damaged trees and hazardous trees. And we've got two wonderful experts with us today, Patricia Joyner with the Alaska Community Forestry Program and Jim Plott, a Spokane arborist who's done a lot of work in Alaska, is very familiar with our trees. So, Jim, do you have any suggestions to make related to maybe some species we might want to consider that haven't maybe taken hold here so much?
Sure. Patricia's mentioned a few. Bur oak is a very good one. Japanese tree lilac for smaller trees. There's tree forms of serviceberry that are very suitable for small species of trees. Some of the amur maples, those are small trees. The lindens, the oaks, the ashes.
What is amur a reference to? A place? Because we have amur chokecherry and then we have amur maple. So are these, where are they coming from?
China, a lot of the trees that we use in the U.S. are from Europe and China and vice versa.
Okay.
We send stuff over there, they send stuff back here.
Okay. But could we not get into the same situation where we get something and then we don't realize it's going to be an invasive? I mean, how do we guard against it? Or do we just know more now?
We know more now, and the potential still exists for that for trees all over. It's pretty surprising that the Mayday tree and some of the other Prunus species have become quite invasive up here because they're used in the lower 48 everywhere, and we don't see that problem that often.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's some unique environments up here, but not unique enough that we should avoid using some of these species of trees.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's some native trees in the U.S. in the lower 48 that'll work here. Working with some of the communities in Alaska, the biggest concern I always heard is that, well, it's not going to work up here because it's too cold or we have too extreme of environments. But I work all across the U.S., including parts of northern Minnesota.
Very rough weather.
Very rough weather, even in some cases even harsher than Anchorage. And there's trees that do quite well there. Hackberry is another one. There's quite a few varieties of trees. And as Patricia said, just get on their website, and there's some recommended trees on there that are suitable.
I'm going to go to the phones. We've got another caller. Hello, Paula. You're talking with Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I'd like to say hi to Patricia. I know Patricia. This is Paula Williams, the Sustainability Director at University of Alaska Anchorage.
Hi, Paula.
Hi. And I just wanted to ask if Patricia, if she knows if there are any plans. UAA is a Tree Campus USA, and I know that the municipality has that designation as a city, or that's my understanding.
Yes, Anchorage is a Tree City USA.
It is a Tree City, okay.
Yes. And I'm wondering if there are any plans by the city to replace any of the trees that have come down in the windstorm?
Well, I don't know. That maybe you need to have a show and have the city come on and talk about it. I know it's been a hard year on the city's budget with the snow and then now the windstorm. Most of the trees that get planted with capital projects on public land. When we get a new road, when we get a new public facility, new ones go in. So I don't know. I would hope so. We work with a citizens group, Anchorage Terrific, and they often sponsor tree planting, maybe in green belts or different places. So if there's donations of trees or funds available and not people to plant them, you know, we often help do it that way so you can find some more cost-effective ways to do that. But it is a real loss to the city, a financial loss. So I would hope to see some more planting.
Maybe we could add that Tree-rific. Is there a website or a contact?
Yeah, they can get information about that on our website. We have different community groups around the state because we're statewide, and Anchorage Terrific's on there, and they have programs in the winter, and so we already think in this winter for sure we'll have one on storm, maybe pruning if you had damage or replacing your trees. And
great, that's great. So that's if you look on Alaska Public, you'll see a link to the Alaska Community Forestry Program, and there they can find their way to Tree-rific or some of these other resources in the community. Yeah. So Paula, what else? Did you have any other questions?
Yeah, and actually, I also wanted to encourage you guys to talk about some of the benefits of trees, you know, other than being beautiful and us wanting them in our yards, you know, their ability to retain moisture in soil and all the other benefits that, you know, why there it is a big issue that some of these trees are coming down.
The bigger picture.
Paula, right. That's a good question, Paula, but I want to kind of make a comment on your first question as well. It's very commendable for a city to plant trees, and this often happens after storm events. But the question that a urban forester or a manager of city trees would ask, do I have the money to take care of the trees that I plant, or do I have the money to take care of the existing tree population? So from an economical standpoint, cities are always strapped with cash flow right now because of the nature of the economy. Do we have the money to plant trees? So maybe we do have the money to plant 1,000 trees, but how many can you take care of after they're planted? Mm-hmm. Trees are a lot like children. If they're not given the proper care and nurturing early on in their life when they're young, they often turn out bad. Mm-hmm. Trees are the same way. If we continue to plant trees and don't take care of them, you're going to see the same structural defects develop that caused the failures in many of the trees in this windstorm.
So what you really need is some kind of a tree management system.
You need a tree management system that encourages planting, pruning, and removal. The whole program needs to be in place.
Is that one of the requirements to be like a tree city or a tree campus, that you have to have some kind of management plan?
Not for Tree City. I believe Tree Campus and UAA does have a tree management plan that they turned in.
We had to submit a tree management plan in order to get designation as a Tree Campus USA.
You know, I think I've seen reference over there that you can actually take a tree tour at UAA. Is that right? Do you know about that, Pat or Paula?
You can. It's wonderful. And at our conference on Friday, there'll be a chance to do that. They've planted a real variety of species and know pretty much the ages of them. So it's a great place if you're thinking of planting something to go there and look at it when it's large and picture what it's going to look like in 20 years in your yard, what it looks like in the fall right now. But you could go during the year and see it change with the seasons, and they have a paper, and then they have numbers on the tree, so you can do guided, and often the university will give walking tours for people.
That's great. That's a great thing. So what else, Paula? What else is on your mind?
I just wanted to say that the University of Alaska has a no-net tree loss policy. A lot of the trees that we do plant are indigenous to the area, and we plant them in areas that have been, for instance, a lot of our planting has occurred out at the Palmer Experimental Farm, where they had a gravel operation. You know, they mined gravel out of an area, and now that a lot of the slopes around that gravel pit became deforested, and that's been one of the areas that we have been replanting in order to replace some of the trees that have been cut down at UAA and some of the trees that we've lost for the windstorm as well.
That's great. Well, thanks a lot, Paula. I am going to go to Cass. Hi, Cass. You've been holding a little bit.
Hi, Kathleen. And I know Kathleen and Patricia, and this is an excellent program. Thank you so much.
Oh, great. I'm glad you're getting something out of it. That's great.
Yeah. Good timing, too. And I just wanted to mention that I work with a lot of tree people, and the arborists and the tree people, the pronunciation of Amur that came up earlier and where it came from, it's a huge river that divides China and Siberia. And they pronounce it Amur, like A-H-M-O-O-R. And every time I hear a tree guy say Amur maple or Amur chokecherry, or, you know.
Makes you cringe. Well, thanks, Cass.
I'm glad you know. I hear it pronounced
anyway,
all kinds of ways.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's good.
Yeah, so anyway, it's I usually say, rather than the A-H, just say Amur. You know, rather, and kind of, you know, just maybe make the A more gentle than it usually is.
Okay, well, that's
thank
great.
Thank you. Thanks for the show.
Thanks a lot, Cass. I really appreciate your call. And I'm going to welcome Lisa. Hello, Lisa. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I am wondering if the trees that have fallen over due to soil failure can ever be saved, or if they're always a lost cause. And maybe if you have time, you could even talk a little bit about how they're saved. And I'm glad to take the answer off the air.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks.
Most of those trees that are soil failures, the entire root plate has been lifted out of the ground and are not salvageable. Unfortunately, that's how it is. Many people attempt to stand those back up, and it's usually not successful without a lot of follow-up maintenance. And a good reason why not to do that is a lot of those trees with the soil failures also were very tall, spindly-type trees that also contributed to their failure as well. So it's probably, in most cases, not a good situation to try and salvage those trees that have failed from soil failures.
You know, Jim, I had a lot of people ask me that question when I was getting ready for the show. This is something, they've seen all these pictures in the newspaper and on the news sites of these trees that look like a plate, you know. They said, can't you just tip that back and tuck that plate back in? And I asked Mike Post, and he said, well, if you do that, you're going to have to anchor that tree down permanently, and then you're going to have guy wire. He didn't recommend it either. I mean, he said, maybe you could do it, but that tree is changed forever by having come out like that.
Well, I don't know if you'd have to anchor it permanently, but you'd certainly have to anchor it for a period of time until the root system reestablished itself and began to anchor the tree again, which may take, you know, depending upon the size of the tree and the follow-up maintenance that occurs, you know, it may take anywhere from 3 to 5 years for that tree to reestablish a root system that's holding the tree mm-hmm. up again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, those trees, considering the crown architecture and the structure of the tree and some of the other issues in the tree, really aren't that worth salvaging. They're just not worth the investment that we'd make. And in some cases, it'd be better off to just start over and plant a new tree.
All right. All right. Well, it's about time for us to take a break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and I'm here with my guests Patricia Joyner and Jim Flott. We're going to take a break right now, but first we have an update from KSKA's Ellen Lockyer on the current flooding situation in Anchorage. Heavy rains in South Central Alaska are inundating local rivers and creeks, causing flood concerns from Cordova to Anchorage. A National Weather Service forecast for the Anchorage area indicates more to come this weekend. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
The storms are coupled with high winds up to 110 miles an hour in some of the higher elevations. At this time, emergency services personnel in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and in the Kenai Peninsula Borough are keeping an eye on flood danger. In the Mat-Su, responders are monitoring a bridge that spans Montana Creek and some locations in the upper Susitna Valley to gauge rising water levels. But one creek on the watch list is actually receding. Moose Creek is below flood stage at this time, and no road closures have been reported. The Mat-Su Borough Emergency Operations Center has been activated as flood watch continues. A band of moisture-laden air coming up from the mid-Pacific Ocean is being pushed by a high-pressure system along the west coast of the United States, and its target is Prince William Sound, which could result in serious flood conditions for both Cordova and Seward. Kenai Peninsula Borough Emergency Services Manager Scott Walden, speaking from Seward, says so far, so good.
So far, there's not been any significant damage, and even though the rain's coming down pretty hard, we don't expect to see any real issues for maybe the next 24 hours or so. But in preparation for whatever may come, we're going to have people in place in both Seward and the Kenai-Salatna area.
Kenai Peninsula Borough emergency responders are prepared for new developments, Walden says. Meanwhile, the National Weather Service's hydrometeorologist Dave Strickland says heavy rain is expected during the next 48 hours.
That moisture is here already, and it is going to continue to be here for the next close to 48 hours, at least the majority of it. We're looking at it to continue to rain at least through Thursday evening. Might get a little bit of a break on Friday, and then back with some more moisture on Saturday.
KSKA continues to provide updates on the storm system. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Well, this is Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and it sounds like, listening to Ellen, we're not out of the woods yet with this weather. One of the things we've been talking about on the show, we're talking about storms, we're talking about trees, hazardous trees. One of the things we've mentioned, which seems to be particularly applicable with this weather we're seeing, is that the ground isn't frozen yet. We got an early storm, and the trees aren't quite anchored in. So this doesn't bode well, would you say, Patricia and Jim? If we're going to get more moisture.
Well, the trees are anchored in. It's just that the soil conditions coupled with the excess moisture are probably going to, and the high winds are probably going to lead to some more tree failures. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned earlier, we were talking about some of these tree failures are actually soil failures is the correct term. And the roots are actually held in place, the tree is held in place by friction occurring between the roots and the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And when you introduce a tremendous amount of moisture, particularly after long dry periods that we've seen up here in the last month or so, it acts as a lubricant and reduces the friction between the roots and the soil. And so some of these soil failures are going to increase as the moisture content increases and the high winds continue to come in here.
Wow. Well, I promised earlier that we might hear from Mike Post, who's out in the field, and it turns out he's called in. So, hi, Mike.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I know that you are an arborist with tall trees in Anchorage, and you probably don't have any time to even eat lunch during the day since we've had that storm on September 4th. But I thank you for calling in, and I'm wondering, could you tell us what you're seeing out there? What have you been doing today?
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. Well, we're getting really wet and we're tired, and I think that's kind of the situation for all the tree services in town. And we're still working on trees that have came down on structures. Even today, we're taking big cottonwoods off of, you know, apartment buildings, and there's a lot of trees that are uprooted halfway or cracked and leaning and hung up in other trees and over people's houses or over walkways and stuff like that. And so even from the first windstorm, which was the most severe, we haven't been able to catch up and take care of all those problems or emergencies, and then to have the consecutive winds, one right after another, and trees that were already compromised are, you know, starting to fall down and fall on houses. So it's been a constant kind of, we've been inundated and overwhelmed with calls, and you know, we're at a point, I think, like everybody else in town, where you just can't accommodate everybody.
We have several tree services in town. I know you represent Tall Trees, and there are others probably in the Yellow Pages or on the web. People can find them, but it sounds like it's probably a universal experience for all the tree services at this point.
Yeah, I think in the 20 years I've been doing tree work in Anchorage here, this has probably been the most catastrophic as far as, you know, trees are concerned. I mean, there's been a lot of big blows and roofs that flying off, but as far as trees breaking and soil failures and property damage caused by trees, I don't think there's been a bigger one.
I don't know if you guys have questions for Mike. Dive in, but I'm wondering if there's parts of town that you see are worse hit, or types of trees that seem to have taken the brunt. Anything like that, Mike?
Yeah, the biggest areas have been all the properties that are adjacent to and connecting to all the small creeks, like Campbell Creek and the Chester Creek. All the big cottonwoods in certain areas uprooted, or, you know, they had soil failures, which a homeowner just knows a tree fell on their house, and they don't, they want it, you know, remedied. And so those are the biggest tree failures that we've seen, and they've caused the most property damage and are continuing to cause property damage as we continue to get rain and as the wind keeps blowing. And so a lot of them have been not actual breakage of the tree, the ground uprooting, you know, and so the majority of the trees that have come down have been become because of the moisture, and they've just pulled out of the ground, the roots and all.
That's where you see that it almost looks like a plate attached to the tree. That's the kind of thing you're talking about. So I'm thinking, with this weather coming, if people have survived, if their trees have survived, is there any advice you have for anybody, Mike? I mean, you really can't go out there and stake all your trees. But we're going to have more moisture in the soil, and we might see more soil failures.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real possibility and almost a guarantee if the winds exceed, you know, 60, 70, 80 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, small ornamental trees, people who have, you know, kind of trees that are, that mean a lot to them, and, you know, they're young trees in their yard, they can maybe do something to help support them with some, you know, with a stake and some webbing or something like that if they're starting to pull up out of the ground. Any of the bigger trees, it's probably more dangerous and wouldn't even help to try to support those, and potentially just hurt yourself or hurt somebody trying to do that.
Another way to look at this is, because we don't want to see a wholesale removal of all trees everywhere because of the storm or the impending storms are coming in. The question we have to ask ourselves is, yes, there was a large number of trees that did fail, but how many are still standing after the storm? A far, far, far greater number are still standing. And actually, when you probably look at the percentage of tree failures compared to the trees that are still left standing, we're talking probably hundredths of a percent of failures compared to the ones that are standing. So that's the thing we have to take away from this, is that trees are pretty resilient. They're tolerant of most of these storms in most cases. When you get 70-mile-plus winds, all bets are off on all trees, not just cottonwoods, not just prunus species. Those are winds that can take things out, including buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be very cautious when it comes to working with homeowners and imparting a lot of fear. And that's what happens a lot after these storms. Mike and some of the other people around here are ISA-certified arborists, and that's who homeowners really need to get a hold of to get their trees evaluated. don't fall prey to the guy with the pickup and the chainsaw driving around trying to find work, because they will tell you the wrong information and you may lose trees for no reason at all that actually add a lot of value to your property and to the community as well, and provide a lot of benefits to the community.
Right, which is something we want to come back. Paula asked us to talk about those benefits. Before, Mike, before you go, I wanted to welcome David, because I thought he might have a question for these three arborists that we have. David, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, thanks.
And go ahead and tell us what your question is.
Okay, I've got a tree in my front yard, and don't know much about trees, but I believe it's a tamarack. Is that a proper name for a tree? It's about 20 feet tall, probably... 7 years old. It looks like an evergreen, but it drops its needles in the winter. The wind yesterday blew the thing over to about 45 degrees, and I was fortunate enough to grab a ratchet strap and suck it back up straight, but with a pole that was beside it. And it's holding straight, but I'm wondering, did it probably damage itself beyond repair? Do I need to get rid of it, or can I just keep it tied up and see what happens, or what?
Well, I think first, David, you probably should get an arborist out there to look at it. I mean, what you did is commendable, but it may not have completely corrected the problem, because you saw one side of the tree lifted out of the ground with the roots pulled out. The other side, where the roots were still underground, if those roots are bent and fractured and other things going on that side of the tree that you can't see, all needs to be evaluated. And it probably needs to be reset properly, which means a little bit more process involved than just pulling it back up upright.
Tree rescue. He did tree rescue.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a good start, but I think in the long run, you're going to have to do a little bit more work to salvage the tree. And your description of the tree, a tamarack, the other common name for it is larch, and it is a deciduous evergreen, which means it does drop its needles in the fall, like maples and ashes and lindens and oaks.
Yeah, that's it. And it grows, grows like a weed. This thing is just jumping out of the ground.
Yeah, it's a very good conifer to use pretty much all throughout the Northwest and in colder, higher elevations as well.
Okay, cool. So I'll just leave her tied up till the big blow's over with, and see if I can get somebody to take a look at it, I guess.
Good idea.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Mike, I know you've got to get back. Is there anything you want to add there? And then we'll say goodbye and let you go back to your tree duties.
Sure, yeah, I appreciate it. I guess just one thing I'd like maybe some of the listeners to take into consideration, that, you know, the companies are trying to prioritize what trees to look at and where to go to try to help eliminate property damage or loss of life. And so there's a lot of debris on the ground, and we're doing our best to get that stuff cleaned up, but that stuff comes, you know, second to trees that are, you know, potentially going to, you know, hurt someone or fall on someone's house. And so we're kind of battling that right now, trying to appease everybody, and people are real excited and very upset. You know, trees are leaning and cracked, and we just can't look at them all. And so I think a lot of people don't realize how severe the tree damage was around the city. And so it would just be something for everyone to keep in mind when they're yelling at their local arborist.
Sounds like you've heard a few.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Mike. Whenever any kind of disaster involving trees in any part of the U.S. happens, the industry is usually overwhelmed. Because it's such a catastrophe in most cases. And it really behooves people to be patient, because, as you said, there are scenarios that are much worse from a standpoint of risk and safety, and that's what we really need to address first, are the most dangerous, most difficult situations first. If you just have a tree that's laying flat in your front yard and not causing any problems, whereas one is laying on a house or blocking an intersection or some other situation like that, then, you know, prudence and due diligence means you take care of the worst-case scenarios first, not those simple ones. And really, all the homeowners really need to be as patient in this type of situation. It'll get taken care of eventually. The worst thing that can happen, and we see this after every storm anywhere in the U.S., homeowners start taking tree care upon themselves. And we see emergency room rates go up. I know from talking to the dealers here, the chainsaw dealers in the Anchorage area, they've sold out of chainsaws, which to me means there's a lot of homeowners who've never ran a chainsaw in their life, are out running chainsaws, and they're tackling situations where a professional arborist would be considered a very challenging situation to remove. They don't understand the safety equipment involved with removing trees, the danger that they put themselves in front of. One of the things that we can provide in the conference coming up here is we're going to have an entire program on tree worker safety. And I think anybody that's running a chainsaw out there, it would behoove them to come and see what actually can happen with chainsaw accidents. And you might think twice about starting up your chainsaw and removing trees that are have fallen and the wood is under tremendous pressure and tension. And these trees can snap and really come back at you and literally kill you.
Yeah, we don't want that. We do not want that. I know that was something Mike mentioned to me. Also, Mike had mentioned that the tree services will catch up. They can work even after snow has fallen. I think people might have some anxiety, like, I've got to get this taken care of before the snow falls. But Mike mentioned to me that they can continue to work even after snow falls. Right, Mike?
That's true. Yep, we can continue to eliminate hazards. We can prune, take care of, you know, branches that are broken up in the trees. You know, a few things we can't do are stump, and that stuff would, you know, and once it's under the snow, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, and we can do that in the spring. Mm-hmm. But all the other type of tree work, we can continue right through the winter.
Well, I want to thank Mike and let you go. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate you taking the time out in what is obviously a pretty stressful and heavy work time for you. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Let's turn to Larry. Larry's been holding, and I want to get your question on the air. Hi, Larry.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I've actually got two questions, and I hope you'll be able to get to both of them. They're completely unrelated.
Okay.
One of them is about Title 21. I was involved in a citizens group working on that, and we spent a lot of time talking about trying to preserve the urban tree canopy. To you know, maintain Alaska as a nature-friendly city with, you know, elegant trees and stuff all around. The only trouble is that the definition of trees seems to involve a lot of what we would call shrubbery, willows and you know, low, shorter stuff that's more brush than what most people would call trees. And I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit while the assembly is still working on Title 21. And the second question is, I've got a tree in my front yard. It's about 40 feet tall, and it's been leaning about 20 degrees off vertical for about 15 years or so. And I'm a little worried about it because it's kind of leaning towards my house. So I've got a rope on it tied to a couple of other the bases of a couple of other trees, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure what to do about it. So those are the two questions.
Two really different questions. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's tackle Title 21. We don't have anybody working for the city here on the show right now. It sounds like you're worried that shrubbery is being included as a definition for trees. I'm sorry, Larry. I wasn't
right.
Quite sure.
You know, if I've got my backyard or something, and I've got a bunch of bushes in it and everything, if the Title 21 forbids me from removing trees, I might get in trouble if I just remove some bushes.
Oh, I see. I am a little familiar. I followed that, and I was on the Urban Design Commission for quite a few years. I don't know what's in the current version of Title 21, but as far as I knew, there weren't any tree preservation requirements in there. I'd be surprised if there were for private property.
There were for developers and stuff like that.
For new development.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that got cut out or not. I kind of fell out of the process.
Yeah. I'm not sure we have a final version yet.
No, we don't.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting show to feature. Just focus on the landscape ordinances because that's real important to how our city looks and the health of it. And
absolutely.
And it's real difficult to legislate those kinds of things on all fronts. So that would be a long topic, more than we have time for today, probably.
Mm-hmm. And how about Larry's second question, that tree that's leaning?
I guess we'd go back again to have somebody look at it.
Well, back up a bit. A tree that has grown through its life normally with a lean is usually not a problem. if the lien occurs all of a sudden, like what we're seeing on some of these storm event situations, then that's an issue, needs to be evaluated. But a tree that sometimes trees lean naturally, we have all seen that in the forest, in the woods, they grow that way because the crown of the tree where that displays the leaves is looking for light. So the tree bends to get to light, more ample light for growth. And if the tree is grown that way naturally, it shouldn't be a problem. You still need, with that kind of, that's a fairly strong degree of lean, so what we'd want to do is maybe have someone take a closer look at it. The thing that you're doing by anchoring that tree, tying it off, you're actually making the problem worse. Because trees actually bend in the wind, and that's part of their natural life cycles. And that moving, that force that is applied to those trees actually creates a stronger structural integrity in the trunk, the branches, and everything. It helps them develop wood and build wood where the weaker parts of the tree are. And if you stake a tree, whether it's a small young tree or an older tree that really doesn't need staking, you're weakening the structure of the tree. If you've ever seen a tree at a nursery, and it's been staked for quite a long time, and you bring that tree home and take the stake off, what happens? It bends over and falls over. The stake is like a weak crutch to the tree. Right. It doesn't allow the wood to develop and build strength. Mm-hmm. So in your scenario, I would have the tree looked at and possibly remove that tied off area. Unless you see indicators on the opposite side of that lean, like fracturing in the soil or a hump in the soil where the soil is raising up, then I wouldn't be that concerned about the lean.
The soil raising is kind of symmetrical, but it's a little bit more on one side than the other. But it's, I was going to say, it's kind of like human bones. Weight-bearing exercise builds your bones stronger.
Absolutely. That's a good analogy. The other thing you can do is actually put a stake out there where you can actually eyeball it every year and actually see if the degree of lean is changing dramatically from year to year to year. If the tree is fairly stable, then I wouldn't be that concerned about it.
It's been stable, but I think it's leaned a little bit more in the past week and a half.
Well, that could be an indicator that that it is giving way on that one side. So an arborist can come out there and take a look at the soil fractures and the soil and kind of get an indication of if there is something going on. That's the best way to resolve the matter.
I tied it off just for this occasion. I just tied it off last night, and I plan on taking the tie down after the wind quits.
It's like children. You have to be watching all the time.
The thing that any the thing in our industry is we're dealing with the biological organism. So one of the things that we can't predict is really how much lean is too much lean.
Yeah, I just want to guide its fall if it falls.
Well, you may guide it in the wrong direction as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Larry. Did you get your questions answered?
Pretty much. How much does it cost to have an arborist come out and take a look? I know it's pretty expensive to have someone take down a tree.
Actually, a lot of arborists will come out and give you a free estimate. Some of them charge. It just depends on the firm. You know, I'd call around. The first thing, when we start recommending arborists, what we want you to do is, first of all, find an ISA-certified arborist, one that is licensed, bonded, and insured, and then check references as well. That's the first place to start with. Mm-hmm. If they meet all those criteria, then you're going to be much better off in the long run. You're going to get some quality work and some good advice usually.
So thanks a lot, Larry. We just have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to get back to some of those things we wanted to make sure we talked about. I wanted to let people know about the conference. I wanted to touch on some of the things Paula mentioned about the good work trees do that nobody's even really thinking about. I know we've kind of mentioned it during the show, but it might be good to sort of reiterate that. But with respect to the conference, is it open? Can an average citizen go to this conference? I realize there's registration.
Yeah, and if you go on your website, you can see all the speakers and details about them and the different topics. And it's tomorrow and Friday. It's not the weekend, but you could register at the door. And we have some really interesting speakers. The first day, we're looking a lot more at how trees benefit our community as far as being part of our green infrastructure, just like our utilities are. And we'll have field trips in the afternoon. One in looking at forest and talking about forest management in a city, and one looking at rain gardens and green infrastructure, how trees function to provide benefits. The second day is a little more focused on trees. Jim's going to talk about things from the storm, and we're hoping to have a discussion with a lot of people there who have seen interesting things. We have Dr. John Ball, who's a wonderful speaker, talking about different species, and kind of goes back to what we talked about early and how you get those that aren't prone to problems. And then we also have Jeff Hermans with State Forestry talking about their biofuels and how they're using trees at the other end to heat the school there. And then we'll have a lot of demonstrations, how to plant, how to protect trees from moose, because that's a big issue. So I think most people would enjoy it and learn from it if you're interested.
So it's for civilians. I mean, it's also for tree professionals, but civilians can come.
Right.
And is there a day rate or a class rate?
There's a day rate. You could just come for the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds great. I also, we did touch on the fact that there's stewardship programs. There's different ways people can connect up if they suddenly are awake to trees and worried about trees. I think they're on your website, right, Patricia? You can.
Right. We often have classes. The Corvid Extension has classes. If people have special requests, you know, we can speak. We work primarily with cities around the state so that they have management programs, but we can speak to community groups and provide publications and that sort of thing.
So one of the things Jim mentioned is that an event like this storm raises the profile of trees in everybody's minds, and they start thinking about them and maybe worrying about them.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, storm events to an urban forester or an arborist, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we obviously, the general public does need to be more aware of the benefits of trees, and often the only time that happens is when we have a storm event that impacts them.
Right.
And if we took more concern, more care before these storm events, the tree failures would not be as significant or as much.
Yeah. So today's a good day to start, right?
Absolutely.
Start your tree education now.
That's right.
The name of that conference is the Urban Forest of Tomorrow.
Right.
And it's over at the Gorsuch Commons on the UAA website, UAA campus.
Campus, right.
Check out our alaskapublic.org for other sources. There's lots there. It's been just a great hour. Thanks to my guests, Patricia Joyner from the Community Forestry Program and Jim Flott, an arborist here to present at this conference Thursday and Friday, not this weekend. And that's called the Urban Forest of Tomorrow. You can find a link to the conference and many other resources on alaskapublic.org. Next week on Hometown Alaska, we have a newsy program again. Host Shelley Ward will host Shell spokesman Curtis Smith on that company's offshore drilling plans and adjustments. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.